Sup, freaks? It's your boy Marty here to introduce this episode with Jessica Solche, the director of Death Athletic, a dissident architecture, a documentary film that will be dropping next month that I had the pleasure of getting a sneak peek to and that I highly recommend you freaks go see when it drops October 21st. You can pre-order at deathathletic.com right now. We will include that website and other information about the film in the show notes, but can't speak highly enough about the film and the importance of the message that it's trying to portray. Jessica and I have a whole conversation about it that you're about to listen to, so I won't give any spoilers here. I'm really excited that you guys are going to listen to this conversation. We don't have any boosts to read because we just recorded back-to-back with Godfrey Bloom and Jessica. And so the Godfrey episode hasn't dropped yet, so there are no boosts to read. But Logan, if you had to think of a boost, what would it be? Let's give them something. This is Logan's boost.
Come Rocket.
It's just Come Rocket. Okay. Very classy. Very classy of Logan. This service brought to you by our good friends. On that note, it was brought to you by our good friends at River. River is doing things the right way in the Bitcoin space. They're building their own infrastructure. They're Bitcoin only. They don't rely on any trusted third parties like Fortress Trust or Rest in Peace Prime Trust. They've built everything in-house. They have a dollar cost average feature that allows you dollar cost average into Bitcoin without paying any fees. They have the tightest spreads in the industry as well. So other exchanges have fees and looser spreads, if you will. River has really compressed those spreads and doesn't charge you fees at all, which is a beautiful thing. So you want a DCA into Bitcoin, River is the best place to do it. They have human support. If you have a question about River services or something going on with your account, you can call somebody. A human will answer that understands your problems. We'll walk you through it. Your Bitcoin, if you keep it on River, which they don't recommend, they think you should take self-custody of it. And this is emblematic of their auto withdrawal feature that they launched a couple of months ago. So you can set up DCA and then auto withdrawal once you hit a certain threshold using River. But if you do hold it on River, you can have peace of mind knowing that the Bitcoin sits in a multi-sig cold storage wallet and is backed one-to-one in reserves. They have River Lightning Services, which is an API service that allows you to plug into the Lightning Network and build products using RLS. What else am I missing here? That's about it. River is my favorite place to buy Bitcoin, most secure place. Team's doing things the right way. They're pretty good. Go to River. Not pretty good. They're extremely good. I'm supposed to sell here. I use River. You should too. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up an account today. You'll get $5 worth of Bitcoin. River.com/TFTC. This group was also brought to you by our friends down the hall, Unchained. Unchained is also doing things the right way. You're building on Bitcoin's native multisig properties. They have their vault, which is a 2 or 3 multisig wallet where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. That's a collaborative custody model. You have control of your Bitcoin, but Unchained is there to help if you need them to be. To sign as part of the quorum. They have their lending desk, which allows you to put Bitcoin up as collateral, allows you to hold 1 key in that quorum, so you have visibility into the escrow wallet to ensure that your Bitcoin is not being rehypothecated. Put Bitcoin up as collateral, get dollars in return. They have their IRA product, which allows you to transition your IRA into Bitcoin and hold your own keys against a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet. They have their trading desk, which allows you to buy Bitcoin and send it straight to your multisig vault. They're building out, again, the financial platform of the future, a future living under a Bitcoin standard. So go to unchained.com/consultation. Set up a consultation today to learn more about what they're building. Tell them that TFTC sent you. You don't have to ape in anything on the product side. Learn more. I'd recommend that you just hit up the Unchained team, set up a consultation, unchained.com/consultation. Learn more about what they're building. I think it's very important. Tell them the TFTC sent you. Last but not least, this was brought to you by Bitcoin Talent Co., a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. If you're a company looking to hire the best talent, Talent Co. has the talent internally to go headhunt for you. They've helped many companies in the space like Unchained land some incredible talent for very important positions, whether you're looking for a CMO, a CFO, a marketing lead, sales development roles. Talent Co is there to help you go find that talent. They have their Flex product as well, which lets you tap into part-time talent. Maybe you don't want to hire a full-time employee, just need somebody to help you with a three-month sprint, six-month sprint, whatever it may be. They have a roster of individuals that are ready to go and do part-time work to help you get what you need to get done and to save on costs that come with hiring full-time employees. So go to bitcointalent.co. Tell them that TFTC sent you and enjoy this very important conversation with Jessica Solcha. Tiki.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
I'm going to parallel Nepomli on Wednesday. I was just seeing that. Yeah. The first time in 2017, they had like these big HODL posters.
Yeah, we've got the Extreme Privacy book.
I actually don't know that. What is that?
I think it might be sponsored by them. Michael Basil. It's How to Get Your Privacy on in the Digital Age.
Gotcha.
Which is, it's important. Like, did you, do you now consider yourself a cypherpunk?
I mean, I would... That's a beautiful title, but I haven't done any accreditation for such a such a thing. I feel like I've documented some pretty cypherpunk shit. Yeah. That would be a beautiful title to try to work to. I mean, I love this world. I don't really say it so directly sometimes. I mean, it's a weird thing, like filmmaking. And are we recording? Oh, we are.
We're recording.
Oh, okay. It's a weird thing. Filmmaking and trying to stay outside of your film or like away from the film, but also I love this world. So
yeah, did you stumble into it?
Basically, so I didn't know I was going to make documentary films. I've been jumping around doing a few things, including acting and theater directing in New York City. And then I was like, I really need to make something. I was dying to make something. And I thought it was going to be a fiction film that I had written or was in the process of writing. And we went away on a little vacation. And I, like, through family friend, was telling me about this artistic piece that he was doing, basically drawing an AR-15 that was, like, 20 feet by 7 feet, and it was going to be this very beautiful but emotional piece, and he was going to enter into the conversation about gun control via this art piece. And visually, it was really beautiful. And this was post-Sandy Hook, and it was everywhere. And I said, well, maybe this is a different angle to just think about this subject. And within 5 days, I just was like, I guess I'm making a doc film. I didn't really know what that was yet, in the sense of I never even thought I was ever even going to make a doc film. That wasn't on my radar in any capacity. And 5 days later, I started making a documentary film. And that weekend, like basically, I think the first day of filming, one of the subjects, Greg Boger, he was like, oh, and have you heard of Cody Wilson? He's doing this thing. And it just started happening. And I was like, well, obviously, he's the yang to your ying. Like that's, These are the two far opposite. We have the emotional and we had the person that's building and creating that's technically, I mean, you could say is the unemotional aspect of it. So like enjoying a political spectrum on very two sides. And so they became the subject of my first film. But you were asking me how I entered into all of that.
Well, yeah, the first one was No Control?
No Control.
Yes.
So basically that first weekend I met with Cody in July of 2013, I learned about Bitcoin. I learned about all these things and they were immediately super interesting to me. And within a month I got into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's funny because your individual archetype, like a artistic individual in New York City. Mm-hmm. Many people wouldn't expect that they'd be somebody like you would be making like hardcore films about cypherpunk, individuals and tools like defense distributed, open source software, open source CAD files.
Sure, I'll take it. I mean, I think at some point, like when New York was supposed to be like where the artists were, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a different kind of artistry now. It's more of a inlined with a certain memo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I experienced that making this film since it took 8 years. Oftentimes people were like, what are you doing? Like it was very, very thematically untouchable. The idea that I was enjoying this world so much. It was so unknown and didn't spark as much curiosity sometimes in conversation that I would have thought. Like people, I guess it's the whole thing of like pushing outside your box. Mm-hmm. You're either like ready for that like new aspect of life, or you just kind of like shut it out, which we see over and over again with new ideas.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, you just touched on it, but this film took quite a bit of time mm-hmm. to actually film and then produce.
Yes.
At what point did you realize that it was going to take you many years to actually tell?
I mean, definitely in 2018 mm-hmm. when the story flipped.
Yep.
Because in 2018, so the film started in April or March. Let's say March 2015. And that's when I knew I wanted to do this. And by 2018, I thought I had a film. Or I thought maybe I'd have to film a little bit more, but I had something. So I was basically with a PR guy that is a fantastic person, started pitching it to streaming. Because I knew at that point I still needed, even though I had been self-producing everything at that point, to do post-production, I need money to do this. So I, he pitched it to the Netflix. And basically the response back was it was on the wrong side of history because I was profiling someone that was not a desirable, basically. Mm-hmm. And within the, we can put all the words in that. But so this film that was on the wrong side of history that didn't have any quote unquote unbiased opinions of people telling their opinions of what these, what Cody Wilson was doing and, how dangerous, criminals can use this, etc. I didn't have that. And it was very obvious in my sizzles that they were shipping around. So I knew in 2018 that on top of what happened to Cody in 2018, I was like, oh, this is going to be an even longer process. I think I probably always knew that unconsciously because the reasoning for doing this film was that, and the reasoning for my first film was that we get the majority of our information with 2 minutes clips on the news, 5 minute little docs that are heavily biased, that the journalist is like also a main character and you can read their opinions from their bodies. Like it's always, it's not that a film can be completely unbiased. I mean, let's be honest, someone's cutting it, someone's creating message, visuals, etc. But you can try to remove yourself. You can try to let the characters represent themselves as much as possible and then thematically code in what they're demonstrating, trying to show, right? And that's what I've hoped to do with Death Athletic. So in 2018, I definitely was like, oh, this is going to be a longer process and it's going to be far harder to find any kind of support. Because we had coupled now that it was on the wrong side of history, then we have a whole kind of cancellation process that even forces other people to not want to be aligned with such a film.
Not even speaking to the film specifically, but I think Cody's incident in 2018 when he got embroiled with that underage sex scandal, which I think you guys handled it very well in the movie.
Thanks.
And, because even me personally, like a Bitcoiner who's paying very close attention to Defense Distributed, I know when that news dropped, a lot of people in the space were like, goddamn it, Cody. Like, mm-hmm. sort of like we can't
associate.
Not me personally, but I, there was definitely that chilling effect.
Well,
in these tangential cypherpunk movements.
For sure. I mean, it's a huge, it's a hard thing to get over, especially if you are, if you know someone, not get over, like get over, but to even, you can think of anyone that's ever been, Russell Brandt right now.
Yep.
You can be his best friend and know his core. I don't know anything about it. I don't know him, but you can still have doubt. Mm-hmm. And that doubt can eat you hard if you don't know what the story is. And most people don't or aren't able to like completely examine all the aspects of it, or they're just willing to like, you know, throw the baby with the bathwater. Like, it happened. I believe the internet. Bye. So, I mean, that was a very difficult, difficult part of the journey for sure. Because not only do you see someone that I'd become very close to get, you know, killed in the media. But you have to ask, you start asking yourself a lot of questions and how much information can be found out and what happened, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. That's funny you say that, right? Because Death Athletic, the name of the film, and it's mentioned without giving away too many spoilers, like having these personal deaths. And then I watched Cody's Death Athletic presentation from Guns and Bitcoin last year, where he really dives into the topic of like killing yourself.
Death athletes.
Yeah, death athletes, and his whole journey with Defense Distributed and getting these files out there into people's hands and fighting the court battles that he did are these sort of athletic deaths that are necessary to sort of push these technologies to a point where Pandora's box has been opened and it can't be shut again.
Yes. So the idea comes from Peter Sloterdijk, mm-hmm. a German philosopher, and he's talking specifically in the framework of a religious, like religious martyrs, religious peoples, Jesus, you know, that, you know, they have a moral conviction, they have an ethical conviction, and they look at like the tyranny of death and say, my ideas override the fear of that death. He talks about the euthanasia, right?
Yep.
In the book as well, I think Sloterdijk uses euthanasia as a euphemism. And this is kind of like the film kind of modernizes it to now. We're not really having religious martyrs in the moment, but we are having like idea martyrs. We're having information, like people all are getting canceled or destroyed socially by being called what, racist, white supremacist, you know, you name it, across the board. And it's creating these, so you have to choose. Are you willing to ride this wave of like, maybe being hailed and then literally dying a social and cultural, maybe like you get kicked out of places, you're no one wants to associate with you anymore, and trying to get back up and prove what you're doing is correct. Death Athletic is, I feel like it's a new motto for life to be a death athlete.
Yeah. And then the Guns and Bitcoin presentation, Cody references Jesus when he's on the cross and he's, it has been done. And he was talking to God, and it's really a powerful statement, because sure. like you're up there on the cross, there are people saying, we got you. But you're up there on the cross saying, no, I actually got you. My work is done. So it be done. And whether it's Cody, Julian Assange, Snowden, Ross Ulbricht,
Aaron Schwartz.
I mean, Aaron, rest in peace.
Yes.
I mean, that's why it's interesting with Cody. I think Cody, still being around, obviously he went through his legal battles, but he's still out. But you have Snowden's exiled. Julian Assange has essentially been tortured to death.
And interesting that Chelsea has not.
Yes.
And she was the main leaker.
Yeah.
So like they pick the architects that they want to mm-hmm. go down. So like the dissident architect idea for the title is also like, are you the chosen like death athlete, right? In Cody's case, there's tons of people hosting files all over the internet. To this day, they haven't went after anyone. He's the only one that's constantly, in trouble.
Yeah.
Or, for hosting these things.
I mean, I think some would make the argument that Jay Stark was targeted to a certain
degree. Jay Stark as well. Yeah.
But despite all that, and I think this is why the film's so important, bring this back to the context of Bitcoin. And I do think the biggest battles that Bitcoin and as a network and then Bitcoiners individually fight have not happened yet. They will come in the future. And in the context of the other death athletes, whether it's Assange, Schwartz, Snowden, Ross Ulbricht, they've all sort of been contained to a certain degree, maybe Snowden to a lesser degree than the others. He's able to enjoy life in exile in Russia. But I think the defense distributed in Cody's story specifically provide like a good framework of, oh, like he went up there and like actually fought the courts, fought the battles and won to a certain extent. Obviously, it hasn't been the easiest path and maybe he doesn't feel like he's completely won yet, but I do think him as an individual, the defense distributed story is a success story in this day and age of this dissident technology movement.
I mean, it is in the sense that he literally is not in jail.
Yeah.
Because from the very beginning, I mean, Cody's super smart. He knew the law. He's had lawyers ever, you know, he knew what he was doing. Like, he at no point was he like, oh, I'm just going to like wing this. Even though maybe some of it was, you know, at the very beginning, young and impulsive and mischievous. And at the same time, he read the law, right? So the interesting part of him and why he's never been in prison for these reasons is because he really played a heavy hand of technopolitics. It's where that, you know, his technology was doing exactly, or using technology to do exactly what he wanted, but playing in the exact framework of law that could not keep up with the technological changes. It's so sclerotic. So yeah, it's a very interesting game. And, you know, he say he hasn't won that because technically it was a license, but the license has been held and like things, the film goes into it. But in essence, he has won because the files are still being out there that on his website, on DefCAD, and it might be under, you know, restriction. You have to be a Legio member and you have to access things. And, you know, it's not just like out there on the internet free willy as just like other people, like, just going to like, I won't name them, but other sites just have it. Mm-hmm. Click of a button, but he can't because he's being watched. But in essence, he's won.
Yeah. And what was it like for you behind the camera, going through this process and watching this over 8 years, whether it's the individual self-development or Cody or the development of the case against him, the cases against him, and how he sort of maneuvered?
I mean, I always felt like I was like in it. I mean, I think part of it is I had to be constantly on top of what was happening. I had to be constantly like, okay, Cody, did you get a message yet? Like what's happening? What's happening? Do I need to come down? Like, so there was a constant back and forth. So, on my side, I constantly felt like I was in this story and definitely like deeply dedicated to every step of the way. So even though I wasn't helping build or do any, you know, I was just watching, I feel like I've been there side by side the entire time. So it's been intense and awesome and fun. And it's always this making this film because of its subject matter in some way has been a super rebellious endeavor for myself. So maybe I'm not a cypherpunk.
I think that's
it would be a beautiful thing.
Well, I mean, especially in today's day and age, I mean, that's why I focus on Bitcoin. Bitcoin's a bit of a rebellion, trying to separate money and state. And it does feel like, I don't know if you would agree, but it feels like at this particular junction in history, as we transition from the industrial age to the digital age, we're really fighting for a future built on freedom. We have two roads. We get freedom tech and the ability of free speech, free association, free money, or the state, the superstructure that it has become over the last couple of centuries, wins, and we get cattle herded into this digital panopticon where humans really aren't free at the end of the day. And like, whether it's Bitcoiners working on the Bitcoin network or Cody and Defense Distributed working on the 3D printed weapons, working on that fight. Like, these are very important fights that we need to be having right now in a world in which many people are complacent, probably apathetic, if we're being honest with ourselves. Like, it is important that we do have these dissidents and this dissident architecture to ensure that we have some form of freedom moving forward.
For sure. Like, and possibly and probably there's always going to be two hyper distinct worlds. And the people that use things like Bitcoin without realizing that they're joining, they're strengthening, you know, some people, you know, stock market, you know, the bros that have gotten in just to make money, even they're kind of forcing that dissidence, whether they like it or not, which is a beautiful, which I always thought was a beautiful thing about Bitcoin. Maybe at the beginning, some people, when they saw, you know, the rise and fall, it's in some ways, like, it doesn't matter why you're in the space. It's so democratic that it doesn't matter who you are, but if you're playing in it, you're pushing it forward. And that's the most interesting thing, is when people create things that the ethos lives inside that system, despite what person uses it in some senses. Like, I mean, we can fight with KYC and all that other stuff, but it's like, if you're pushing that conversation forward and that system forward, I think it's interesting when it doesn't matter who's using it or why they're using it, but the fact that they're using it is actually building that system stronger, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it gets back to the concept of the intolerant minority. If you believe that thesis of how the world has gotten to where it is, the intolerant minority of the late 18th century was the revolutionary Americans who fought for our independence. And it was a very small group of people who ensured that we had freedom moving forward. And fast forward to today, the Cody Wilsons of the world, the others in the 3D printed gun movement, and the Bitcoiners, like this intolerant minority that recognizes, hey, this is all really structurally and systemically fucked up. Like, we need these new systems to sort of clear the board and make sure that we have freedom moving forward.
And we're going to build it despite your distaste. And when you change your mind, come join us.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll
that's like the beauty part.
That's it's the meme in Bitcoin. You'll get Bitcoin at the price you deserve.
No. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Goodness. Everything that's being built right now and being torn down, it's a terrifying and interesting time.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, what's happening across United States and other countries.
Well, that actually is a very good framing too. There was a conversation about this over the weekend somewhere I was at, is like, at this particular point, like, should we focus on tearing things down or building things up, or do we need to do both
simultaneously
at the same time? Yeah.
I think El Salvador is doing that very well.
Yeah.
Tearing down and building up at the same time, which makes it rather interesting.
Yeah. But going back to the sort of large scale apathy that exists out there, are you confident that we'll be able to succeed in this endeavor to build anew while also tearing down the terrible superstructures that exist in our life?
I don't know if I'm confident of it.
No.
No, I mean, you hope. I think there's going to be, like, actually right now, the whole, like, empire is dying. I think it is dying in an essence, but it's going to be like a long death. It's not going to be like civil war tomorrow. Our wars are now in the digital framework. They're just, you know, the future shock is coming too fast for an actual war in some ways. Unless it's on other people's ground, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about, like, in America. It seems like the people that are building or want to build or are attracted to this, like, dissident architecture, if you will, they're moving to countries that are willing, and they're so broken by their past that they're like, we have nothing to lose except to grow. And so the apathetic people, I think, in some ways might get left behind. And other communities that have, like, strong belief systems, no matter what they are. I mean, we see these popping around, like, their attempts. Those are the ones that are going to get built up. But then most of these communities that are building are also building tech, right? And that tech will end up being in competition probably with larger tech, Google, blah, 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 the AIs of the world that are all going to be competing against each other. And then it'll just be there as an out.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, I don't know how you win on the tech front other than always have that out.
Yeah, that's,
without war.
Well, that was, I actually recorded an episode right before this with Godfrey Bloom, who's in the UK Parliament, or has been historically. I'm not sure if he is right now, but we got to a point in the conversation where they're like big tech, whether it be YouTube or Russell Brand, Twitter before Elon took over, but I'm pretty convinced that Elon's like the Manchurian candidate of the private sector.
Like every now, every day it changes. It's like, do I like him? What's happening?
But I do think you have apathy in the general populace, but then you also have like this undeserved confidence and almost bold overstepping of the line by big tech and big governments, where it's becoming increasingly obvious even to those that are apathetic. They'll have these sort of moments of like, wait a second, that's a little messed up. Like YouTube can just take his salary away. Nigel Farage in UK, they can just take his bank accounts away.
Yeah, it's like at one point, does it go too far? And then everybody has to wake up in that way.
COVID, lockdowns, I think that woke a lot of people up.
That did wake a lot of people up. People that were hardcore, like, I mean, statist. Not to use, status to use all those words. But yeah, hardcore. I met some of those people in New York, like new friends that got woken up during that period of time. And they went hard. It wasn't just like, you know, it's like take the red pill and go hard. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, okay. Nice to meet you. There's that also the part that I think why people seem also so apathetic is because a lot of people are just so quiet and they're scared to cross that line and to be that person and to, you know, ruin their friend group. And which was an interesting part, what we were talking before, is like when I was making this film, like I'd bring up all these topics and I would always be like, oh, I wonder if I still have a friend tomorrow, just because I was like introducing them to all this stuff that was happening a lot, like over and over and over again. But you have to keep on doing that. I guess that was my own death athletics with my friends.
Well, I think if your friends, if they did sort of say, all right, I'm going to dissociate from Jessica after she's talking about it, you see the end product. That's what I think you did really well in this film, is really highlight the first principles, arguments, the philosophy behind why, if you sort of simply strip away the end product, which is a gun, and get down to the philosophy behind, hey, this is open source technology. This is information that is out there, and that you as a human with inalienable rights to freedom of association, freedom of speech, and freedom to access information should have access to, and really laying out that first principle. Like, what does it mean to be human? And not only that, to be a free human. Mm-hmm. It's, if you are to believe that you're free, you should believe that you should be able to get access to information and discern for yourself what to do with that, and not have it sort of fed to you or gatekept by authorities.
For sure. And like, this is a film, quote unquote, about guns, but it's much broader than that. Like, it's amazing how many people still think Cody like bought and sold guns, like physical guns. Like, that was never a thing. He's never given anyone a gun. It was always about code, always about information. So sure, you have this gun debate that's going through the film, but it's really about who gets to surveil, who gets to control, who gets to govern what you get to share on the internet. This, you know, like internet freeway, like of digital information, like, and can you even? So when I talked about gun control, my first one was like, everyone talks about gun control, but is there any efficacy to any of this? And when you look at this whole online information debate of who gets to control code, at the same time, everyone's trying to throw legalities and laws on that, but you can't control it. You literally, it's an uncontrollable thing. What they can do is just scare the living daylight out of you, like New Jersey did. New Jersey passed laws that if you were like, so Kuti's website, DefCad, had to basically block the state of New Jersey because New Jersey said, if you give information to a New Jersey resident, you're doing a criminal activity. And if a New Jersey resident has that information on their computer, criminal activity. So like literally the information was, you know, a ticking bomb. Like that was a felony, which is wild, which only just makes criminals of anybody who has information, right? The interesting part of it is this film is about guns. It's about fighting the United States government, taking it off ITAR, taking certain munitions off of ITAR, which is the Cold War set of regulations that the United States put together during the Cold War that still exists to this day, because once the law goes up, they never go down. It's really about the spread of information, who gets to control it. I think Cody says it, can the government, oh yeah, he does, get in between you and your computer? Mm-hmm. And to what degree? Cut to like all the digital tech that needs to form to make sure they can't.
Yeah. Now, again, going back to that critical inflection point, like the future in which the government is that gatekeeper and all this information is extremely scary. I mean, we're seeing it play out in real time. They're trying to. I mean, you had that law passed in the UK, I believe it was last week or the week before, where mm-hmm. they're forcing companies to inject backdoors to their end-to-end encryption services, which essentially renders any end-to-end encryption.
Did Signal say they're closing down for, like, I haven't followed.
I haven't caught up on Signal's particular response to this, but you can see they, and again, that's why it's almost beautiful too, because we're at this inflection point, because I think the governments who have overstepped the boundaries and are really encroaching like they never have before on civil liberties and freedom in the digital age do realize that once this stuff is widely accepted to be free and open information that cannot be controlled, it sort of defangs them to a point that is scary for them.
Sure.
And for the apathetic masses, it might be scary for them too, because I think the state is the natty that's going to make sure everybody plays nice. But when it comes back to the particular subject of gun control, I mean, I grew up in Philadelphia mm-hmm. and my mother was a parole officer. She didn't hold a gun because she was so anti-gun. So I wasn't even allowed to watch Power Rangers growing up because they had guns in it. It wasn't until I found Bitcoin, probably like early college years, I was probably like, people would have considered me a liberal. I was like, guns are bad. But getting into Bitcoin and really exploring these ideas of open source technology and what is freedom of information, freedom of association, freedom of money, you get down to like the criminals are going to find a way to do criminal activity at the end of the day, whether it's money launder, find a gun to hold somebody up or kill somebody. And there's nothing you can do to stop that. And it's like what I try to do here and the broader conversation I think that needs to happen, what Death Athletic really does a good job of sort of exploring and putting out there is, this information should be accessible to anybody. Like you can either have the government gatekeep mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, they're doing a lot of nefarious things. At the end of the day, they're using that gatekeeping status to basically commit crimes behind the scenes, or you can have this all open and just accept that we live in a world with risk and trade-offs. Sure. And where do you want that trade-off to sit?
But what would the politicians do for their job?
They're all sociopaths, too. That's the problem. Yeah,
what would Menendez do?
It's another perfect example.
What would he do? I mean, he's got to take things on the side. Got to hold the law up for those side hustles.
That that's the beautiful irony of this. So for anybody who's unaware, Bob Menendez, senator in New Jersey, or...
Yes.
Basically just got indicted for... And
Minister of Foreign Affairs, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. He got indicted for accepting off-the-book payments in gold to waive the sentence of somebody. I forget who.
Yeah, it was like, yes. I think I didn't read the whole thing. Combinations giving information to the Egyptian government.
Yes. He took a bribe.
Yeah, he took some bribes.
And this was after the... It's ironic because he singled out El Salvador and Bukele.
Of course.
and their Bitcoin legal tender law and all the money laundering.
That's right. Bukele did a post. Yeah. Bukele did like his own little like post about it. But also like a few years ago, he was basically caught red-handed as well, getting like fake visas for some guys, like girlfriends, and doing all this. Hey, you know,
nothing shocks
you,
me.
You show what you are from the beginning.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a good topic. Like, what was it like for you filming Death Athletic and being this up close and personal to the sort of court process, not only of this case, but like generally, like dealing with U.S. courts, appellate courts.
I mean,
Jersey attorney.
Wow, like definitely, this was very enlightening, both for the process of DD suing the United States government, and also through the criminal process about how difficult it is for courts to address information and to process information, if that makes sense. Like, there's so many times when, I mean, I don't know all the like the words for it, but they wouldn't consider, I forgot what it's called. Like, sometimes there is a, we need Cody right now. They wouldn't consider the merits. Mm-hmm. And they still wouldn't consider the merits in the case. So when you see him in 2018, and at one point he's like, I guess we're going to have to go to the Supreme Court, they would never actually address the merits of the case. Because if they address the merits, then they would have to consider that, oh, they're right. This is a First Amendment thing. It was basically already established under Bernstein and PGP and pulling it off ITAR. This is code. This is not guns. This is code. We have to let it pass. And giving the license that Cody got in 2018 was a demonstration of the DOJ going, okay, we're gonna lose. We've had these five incidents prior, which the film highlights, you know, in 85 and 95, like of saying, you know what, this is unconstitutional, guys. This prior restraint on this information it's unconstitutional. We need to change this. Finally, DOJ was like, let's give them a license. Game over, move it off of ITAR, let's go. But then, you know, the AGs, attorney generals across the United States just went berserk, because what are they going to do about their gun policies and their, you know, their for the only thing they talk about if Cody wins. So sorry, I lost my train of thought of what your original, being part of the process. Yeah. So it was really interesting how difficult it was for the system to really acknowledge the complete battle if they won't even consider the merits. And then on this other side of the criminal part, just the system of actually watching in the news how like one piece of news came out and then everybody parroted it. Mm-hmm. And the words they chose to use, and how you see it with other people in the news, like they're guilty before they're guilty. It's not, mm-hmm. they're, you know, it's the court in the social media. It's death by social media. It's death by journalism. It's not, you know, wait to see what happens. What's the facts? And seeing that firsthand with someone that you know is so intense, when you're getting different stories across the board. So yeah, this entire film has been definitely an educational process. Court systems, of how difficult it is to win, and knowing that people that aren't supported within court systems doing criminal or not doing criminal, but just you're fucked.
Yeah. Is that jaded you as an individual or radicalized you?
Probably radicalized me more. I mean, I saw it a little bit. I was researching many years ago, the death row system, mm-hmm. in Texas. And how just even if you, let's just say you support execution, it is so tax, like to keep someone on death row is just sucks money out of the system like crazy. So you can even be like for death row, but you're like, oh, but where are my taxes going? Yeah, it's going towards like the 92 times this guy's going to come in and out of the court system with lawyers that are falling asleep that won't even present cases. And sometimes they are innocent. And if, you know, if you just have some lawyer that's doing cocaine on the side that won't even give information, like there's steps to giving information, the guy, the people don't even have a chance.
Yeah.
They don't have a chance. Anyway, so I saw some of that sclerotic, broken system then. And this only, I mean, yeah, this only fermented all of that. Yeah. But on a much larger kind of like U.S. broad scale.
Well, that's the interesting thing about Cody Defense Distributed and this 3D printed gun movement is I think maybe they sparked the fire. And now, I mean, we mentioned Jay Stark earlier, but like people are really picking this up. And that's the incredible thing about this particular movement and this story is we are seeing the fruits of that free access to information today, whether it's the insurgent military in Myanmar, they're using JSTARC's
FGC9
to fight back against what they would deem to be an oppressive government. Yep. Like it is like, again going double-edged sword. Yes, guns can kill people and criminals can get access to them, but if you only give criminals access to them, like you are damning people to a life of oppression. And something like Myanmar, I believe. Many other countries in Latin America are leveraging it too. They're just showing
different ways in Latin America, but yes.
But showing that like, hey, this is giving people like a bit of asymmetric leverage against potentially oppressive states.
Yeah, the asymmetrics. And that is definitely a very hard concept for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Jay Stark is super interesting. That's my one regret. We were talking from the beginning and he's like, you should come visit. And COVID hit. And I was like, I can't come.
Yeah,
I can't come. And not knowing that he was going to pass away so quickly. It's a story that I think is, you know, even if someone hates guns, it's not a story really about guns.
No.
So, yeah, Jay Stark. Yeah, no, the interesting, one of the also interesting parts of this story is because Cody's life changed in 2018, it did embolden the very first movement that like what was going to happen. People had dedicated themselves to the ideas, but nobody was really like, people were making things, but there wasn't that ethos, that immediate, like we must take the reins.
The call to action.
And that happened in 2018 with Deterrence Dispensed and Jay Stark and Ivan the Troll. And that was a super interesting moment because it was like, okay, if something does happen, there is a movement behind this. There are people that will try to take the reins and continue. And Jay Stark did that extremely well.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the title of the film, Death Athletic. Like that athletic death needed to happen for people to realize like, oh, he proved that this is out there. Like there's nothing anybody can do about it. Like it shouldn't be this one. I mean, Satoshi's very similar in the sense that he had not even like a publicly athletic death, but I think whoever he or they were had the intuition, like I need to remove myself from this process and somebody's just let everybody else take the reins.
And it's amazing how well he did that. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we know everybody was trying to find him.
Yeah.
And then we found Craig Wright. Wait, is he going to sue me?
I think he's getting sued in Australia right now. Latest I heard he's getting extradited to Australia.
Interesting.
Face some tax crimes there.
That's Satoshi's ability to truly cloak themselves. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, not only amazing, but essential to the long-term success of Bitcoin.
Sure.
Similarly with the 3D gun and print. 3D printed gun movement, like again, like you just mentioned, like wasn't until people realized that situation that Cody got into in 2018, like, oh shit, like he's not here to lead this. Like we got to pick it up. Like you need those events, whether it's Satoshi's, like just stop answering message board questions in April 2011 or whatever it was, or this very public sort of death that Cody had in 2018.
Sure. Yeah. And definitely his cycle started immediately in 2013 and then 2015. And the other part is like, which he continues to struggle with, which any company it's gonna happen more and more, which leads to the need for more for Bitcoin, is that PayPal closes you down. Mm-hmm. You lose your bank accounts. Banks decide to close, like they don't have to give you reason. And we are so dependent on that little plastic card that I mean, it just shuts life down. I mean, we saw it in Canada with the truckers. Like, we're being fed, like, example after example after example. So maybe it will push the apathy into a direction that's so extreme that one day you do take down your masters, right? And maybe that's what has to happen.
I mean, it's like MasterCard and Visa. What they recently added in the last year or so the... like on their back end, like they're essentially labeling with product numbers, like the types of goods you're buying, guns being one of them. And like, they're literally setting the groundwork to just
whether or not
debank the
gun,
the arms industry here.
Yeah. Well, not the big ones though. Not the defense.
No, that's
the other. And of course not the defense industry. I think DeSantis was saying something. I don't know what happened with it. He was going to like force those, like make sure that that didn't pass in Florida. Like they couldn't do that to Floridians or something. I don't know where that, went. But yeah, it's like, who's in control of your money? We're not getting blocks of gold like Menendez from Egypt. So if you're not getting blocks of gold, who holds your money?
Right.
Yeah.
And again, it's going to become more, and it's getting into weird territories too, where guns are obviously very controversial, and it makes sense that the government, and it's funny going back to the Godfrey conversation. I mean, we do live in a somewhat fascist society, if you go with Mussolini's definition, that the convergence of the state and the corporate world is what the true definition of fascism is, and whether it's the media, the payments networks, big pharma, big ag, like they are completely molded together. Mm-hmm. And many people want to blame it on late stage capitalism, but we live in a truly centralized fascist economy globally. If you go with the definition that fascism is the state and corporatism mending, molding together.
For sure. All supporting each other on the information freeways.
Yeah. But it's weird in the 21st century, 2023, that's sort of what people call it, the hyper-real reality that's been erected around us, like access to our smartphones and thinking that we have freedom and quality of life.
But it's really sucking us into, I mean, we all have our like weaknesses with our phones, right? Mm-hmm. But it is creating that apathy that allows everything to blow past us, right?
It's like, yeah, everything's great.
Yeah, everything's
great.
Got
the internet, I can tweet.
Yes.
Or X, Z, whatever we're calling it these days. I can live stream over the internet.
Sure.
I can call.
Our families are falling apart.
Yeah. I can call a cab for my app. It's pretty cool. It's pretty good times. But again, it's getting weird. I'm scared. And I said, I'm not scared, but it's just like, definitely scared is not the right word. It's like, right, we need to figure this out. You have children. I have children. It's like, I think of my kids, and they're very young. I'm like, what world are you going to grow up in?
Sure.
And, I think free access to information, I think open source 3D printed gun files and open source money are what going to allow them to be free. Yes, the world will come with risk. Risk exists. We live in an uncertain reality. It's trying to communicate to people to be comfortable with that risk and not try to have the nanny state manage it for you.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know how to bridge that divide. I mean, do you think most people are apathetic?
Oh, yeah. I think most people are. I do think people are waking up. I think, again, going back to the government and this fascist superstructure really shooting itself in the foot, it's overstepping its boundaries, and I think it's lost control of the Frankenstein it's built, particularly on the monetary side of things. People really are hurting.
Yes.
Due to the inflation.
They're hurting.
That exists out there.
And they're being like just seeing how much money is going abroad is, it's just this, I think, but this, there's so much news, which is behind this idea of future shock. So much is happening, and people are, you can't take in all, like, our brains are not meant to, we don't have the ability of the time of day for most of us, because we work, you get around, you have to do all these things, to absorb, understand, also inform yourself about what's actually happening by doing your own research. So it no matter what, even if you're not complacent, there's no way of dealing with this onslaught. So it ends up taking you out of, like, what actually is important, which is, like, stabilizing what you have in the immediate. And if everybody was just to, like, take care of their own immediately, that actually would, like, that would have a bounce effect, right? Yeah. What does that mean? And then it bounces out and you realize that you have to dissociate from the top. Mm-hmm. But that's a hard thing to do.
Yes.
When we're so addicted to now so much information and have opinions on it.
And the convenience and mirage of comfort that these technologies provide. Yeah. It's like people are just like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to submit to the Borg. I'm well fed. I'm okay. Like, just people get complacent. They're like running on the hamster wheel. They're like, it's not worth it. It's like, give me my VR goggles and put me, get my Instacart delivery here on time and I'll be fine. Whatever. I won't push back. I'll go into the pod willingly.
I was doing this brief other job, basically research. I won't go into too much, but it was really interesting to learn how many people buy on the internet everything, even, and it's across all economic structures, very poor to very rich. Everybody is having massive amounts of packages coming in. It's like a constant flow of material that, but it's why do you need 10 packages a day? You're also ordering food from McDonald's to be delivered. It's we are so complacent in the form of, like, all the things that we can get. And it's so constant that most people aren't fighting for anything anymore. They don't even know what they're eating, right? They're not eating food. Like, most people aren't eating food.
It's industrial sludge.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're not eating food, then what kind of reality are you living in? You're living in the reality that's given to you. Yeah, it was a very interesting how, like, no matter where you sit in the economic scale, the majority of people are just, it's just consuming, but it's consuming via the internet. It's not consuming, like, even going to a shopping mall and walking around with friends, which, you know, it's like, oh, a nostalgia for the 80s. Like, at least you had to, like, socially interact while you were buying your, like, cheap earrings or something. Now it's really just constant Amazon packaging, things without even need. I've seen it in real life. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and that's, like, one of the nefarious minute details of the Borg's sort of strategy, which is divide people.
Sure.
Whether it's philosophically with particular framing that's put forth through the media, or physically, where it's like literally create the conditions that make it so it's not necessary to actually have to go out and interact with people. You can get everything delivered to you.
Yes.
In meat space, by using your phone. Yep. You get all the information you need by using your phone.
Mm-hmm. All the information you need.
Yes. All of it. It's scary. And like you said, like, I fall prey to it too. I mean, we go to the farmer's market every weekend. We go to the store to get our food. I like to stay very connected to the food I'm feeding myself and our children. But yeah, no, it is very easy.
It's very easy.
Again, going back to the convenience of it all. That's sure. What sort of lulls people into that false
sense. But it's actually not very convenient.
Why do you say that?
Because it's for people that are either don't have money and they're just buying a bunch of cheap things. That's not convenient on their wallet. And in the end, if they're eating just sludge, they're going to be sick. They're going to be overweight. Their body's going to break down while they're young. This is not convenient. This is fake convenience. With the, you know, like, intentional slow suiciding of your own body.
Yeah.
So convenience isn't even like, convenience is like not even living in the moment, because that would, I think that would be something nice. It's like just, it's just being, I don't know.
That's really falling
prey to like
your dopamine receptors. Yeah, and the concept of instant versus delayed gratification.
Yeah, for sure.
But that instant gratification has a diminishing return on utility after a while, until you wake up fat, diabetic, and
unable to move. It's not very convenient then.
Oh, yeah.
How do we get on this subject?
the apathy. Like, why are people apathetic? And bringing this back to Death Athletic, like that, again, like that's why I really enjoyed the film, and I think it's very important for people to watch, because diving into the first principles of like why this is important, again, stripping the guns away and just getting back to the first principles of you are human, you should have access to this information. I think you portrayed that beautifully, and that I do think, even if you're skeptical, normie, who hates guns, like it's going to be hard to walk away after watching 102 minutes of this film and not understand that, like, hey, this is a human issue, not a guns issue.
I hope so. That's what I hope. And I think it's there. This is a real human rights issue.
Yeah. And, so what do you think's next for the 3D printed gun movement and Cody and Defense Distributed?
It's not going away.
No, I just saw they released GatGPT.
Yeah, so Cody's playing with AI now.
Mm-hmm. That's actually, like, when they announced that, like, their trailer, your trailer, that's one thing, and I'm really interested to get your insight to this. Defense Distributed, and again, I think this is part of the reason why Cody's been so successful, is number one, he knows his shit, he understands philosophy inside and out, and then this focus on aesthetics and messaging is really sort of threaded throughout all this, which is important. There's sort of like a beautiful aspect to it aesthetically that draws people in as well. Did you notice that?
For him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, from the get-go. I mean, at the beginning, everything he was doing was purely symbolic, right? And he was creating, like, he makes all his videos. That's Cody's behind everything, right? And he's always been very aware. Maybe in his other life, he would have just like tried to be a filmmaker or an artist of some sort. I think he's very drawn to the process of creating story and propaganda and visuals and beautiful images and filmmaking in general, and how you build a story. And that's all in his work. The music that he always chose, you never thought he was going to pick like Arvo Pärt for the very, very first, you know, his gorgeous classical music. Like, it's always very, very interesting and beautiful to watch. And also, oftentimes his films are, you're like, what was that about? Like, he's not, he has like anagrams. He has like little puzzle pieces. He gives, you know, pictures of things that he doesn't explain, and then 4 years later you realize that's something called Goliad. So he's always constantly playing with symbols and slogans and anagrams and ideas. So I think it's a lot of play for him, for all the seriousness of his life, all the things that he's like having to fight for. His films, in my opinion, are his relief projects. Those are his like beautiful things that he makes, and he's really proud of those. And when YouTube took everything down, that was not a fun time.
No, as they'll do.
Yeah.
They've taken a lot of our stuff down.
Yeah.
But no, I think in this day and age, like the film that you produce is beautiful. Obviously Cody and the work that Defense Distributed did, they have like a really important focus on the aesthetics of it all. Like, in this day and age, the world is wrought with so much ugliness.
Yes.
Like, in the physical world, in the social aspects of how we talk to each other and
even
the state of discourse.
Films are kind of ugly now. I mean, I couldn't watch The Little Mermaid, but that looked like a two-dimensional, flat, the few scenes that I saw. I mean, films are ugly now. And documentaries, I mean, I love documentaries, but now they all look exactly the same and they have the exact same formula. They have the exact same crescents. Everything's stretched across nine episodes to keep on bringing you back. And so you watch the same footage over and over again. It's all like, I don't want to make that. Yeah. Like aesthetically, we need to make beautiful things that surprise people. Yeah. So I kind of hoped to make that as well.
Well, in the world of like film, what do you think has led your industry astray to such a point where it's all very formulaic?
Well, I think streaming has definitely changed the formulas that have come out. I mean, they've got lots of money and they want to bring people back to their platforms and it works. And they want control. I think basically unless you're like a famous director and you're doing something for streaming, they have final cut. Directors who do things with smaller directors, I guess, for they don't own their rights. You know, they're paid to make the film and then Netflix owns it. HBO owns it. You don't own it, right? So in essence, you're just like paid hands. And so at what point does the artistry come in? If you don't own it.
It's very, again, formulaic.
Yeah, you're working for a boss.
It's like an industrial process.
So I think that's happened across the board for basically like everything.
Are you bullish on these? Well, it seems like the strike has ended.
It looks like it's ending.
But were you happy? Like, was there...
I wasn't happy or not happy. I've never really been within Hollywood. I mean, I worked as a personal assistant for a while, a while ago. For many reasons, I've never done that. So it just doesn't affect me. It's not my world. I have friends. I don't want them to suffer. I want them to do their jobs. I don't want them to be like selling their face to AI. Mm-hmm. I wish them the best and I hope they came up with a great deal, but in some ways it doesn't touch me whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's a old, rough, system
with convoluted incentives to power structures.
Very, and they just make a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like what's
like
the best movie I've watched like that's come out in recent years.
Like that's a big Hollywood film.
Yeah.
That's a good question. It's not like an indie director out of like Spain or something like that. Good Hong Kong, Parasite.
Parasite was good.
It was good. I love that film.
Yeah, it was really good. It was surprising at the end. I'm going back like Pan's Labyrinth. What was that, like two decades ago?
That was a while ago.
Yeah.
That was a while ago. I mean, there are good films coming out, but I don't know if they're directly coming from Hollywood.
No. Yeah, Hollywood seems like epicenter of the degeneracy.
There's tentacles to many things when you say Hollywood, but I mean, I hope... The thing is, like, if you're not in Hollywood, to find funding, to find all of that, it gets very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Extremely difficult. I know this firsthand.
I mean, we've mentioned it a couple of times. But do you think, like, these AI technologies have any validity in terms of helping creative filmmakers drop the cost of what it takes to produce,
bring
their vision to the world? Or is that all...
I'm sorry.
Is that all noise?
I don't know. The craziest thing is, like, last week I was like, oh, my friend sent me something because they plugged in their film that they're making. And they were like, just like, what the hell? The AI just like broke down the entire film, wrote the entire documentary, like in seconds. So I was like, oh, I wonder if I plugged in Death Athletic, what would it write? And it was kind of mind blowing. It gave you a format. It gave you scene breakdown if you wanted. It gave you there's a legitimate concern, especially if what needs to be produced is just formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
Why have a writer write down the 900 scenes that you need when AI can do it in 4 minutes or less, and then you can just pick the best ones?
Yeah.
So that was a moment last week where I was like, oh,
holy shit.
Oh, dang, man, this is crazy. But then that will, I think, just create an extra divide between things that are like industry made.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be made like processed food and like probably films that have to struggle to be made and maybe actually have a voice. And maybe that was always the story. Mm-hmm. Hollywood makes Hollywood, indie filmmakers struggle to make, and then one of them actually, you know, not everything. Hollywood can make good films sometimes. I love the Westerns. Mm-hmm. There are moments of everything, right? But that just means when one pops up, maybe it'll have more force of nature and be more amazing. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't want to like pan and say everything's going to like be die, because there's always exceptions to the rule.
Well, like Death Athletic proves, the human spirit always finds a way to peek through. And that's, yeah, I go back and forth with that because I leverage it. I use it to create thumbnails for our website, and if I need to proofread something, I'll dump it in one of the chat bots, just like, hey, help me edit this. But or something, the idea that AI is just going to wholesale replace everything we do, just, again, I don't think you can strip humanity away from planet Earth.
Sure. Yeah, maybe it's just going to go after some people's jobs.
Yeah. We've had this happen all things. This is what factories did. This is what email did.
This is
the way things go.
This is the second industrial revolution. It's the AI revolution.
Yeah. We'll
see what happens.
I don't know. I honestly...
AI is going to like force all the seed oils to stop being produced.
I hope
so. It's going to decide for us.
That would be great.
It integrates in the system and says you will die.
That's what we need. Can the AI just tell us like, all right, here's how you regenerative farm the world. And yeah. You can get all the beef tallow you want instead of this industrial sludge. Jessica, this has been great.
Thank you for having me.
I know it's been a bit of a meandering conversation.
Yeah, it's nice.
But
I feel like I'm in your house.
Yeah. We tried to set up the studio that way. Where can people find out more about Death Athletic? When's it coming out?
So deathathletic.com. Mm-hmm. I'm on Twitter, Jessica Solce, S-O-L-C-E. Trying to keep it updated. I'm like really venturing into using Twitter. but the trailer dropped. There's a pre-sale right now. So the pre-sale is just through my website. I will have Bitcoin up soon. Everyone's asking. I had someone buy the other day, and then I've been seeing, basically put in like a really gnarly email. That's not a gnarly email. It's like, I can't get you the product if you don't put in a real email, guys. Yes. Like it's not going to compute. It'll be up soon, so pre-sale on the website, and then it's going to release, those pre-sales release on October 21st. It'll be on Google, iTunes, and
Amazon.
Vudu didn't take it. I guess Vudu doesn't want the, I thought that was funny. So it'll be there, but buy off the website because it'll go, you know, I don't have to do a 50% cut with Amazon, etc. October 21st, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Where do you hope it goes?
I mean, I hope more people see it. I mean, you can only wish that it becomes like a film that has legs, mm-hmm. and the more people see it, and talk about it and spread the information. And, you know, I can only hope that it kind of pushes out there into the wild. I'm getting really good feedback from the trailer, so that's been super nice. And then Parallelly Polly this weekend or next weekend. And then there's going to be premieres. Urbit Lisbon, I think, is happening. Mm-hmm. And then I'm hoping that people can reach out and be like, let's do a screening here. Come to wherever, we'll put up a screening, and then, you know, get tickets, you know, and do it like that to just keep on spreading the word.
Yeah. We were talking earlier, we might try to do a screening here at the Commons.
That'd be awesome.
At some point. We can fit a couple hundred people in here.
That's a lot of people.
It'd be great. Jessica, again, thank you for the work
that
you've done. The movie's incredible.
Thank you.
I had the great pleasure of getting a sneak peek to it, and it's enthralling.
Thank you.
Beginning to end. And again, it's a very important message to get out there and story to be told. So thank you for telling it and spreading the message.
Thank you. It was fun.
Deathathletic.com. We'll link to all this in the show notes. Peace and love, freaks.
Bye. Okay.